why we're here. So if you have any doubts or reservations, now's the time to say so. No one will think any less of you. Because once you enter this family, there's no getting out.
You told me to do this.
All right, go ahead.
All right, welcome to the Jones Zone. What episode are we on, Chris?
Episode 6.
Episode 6 of the Jones Zone. We are here with our special guest. He's an entrepreneur. He's a personal trainer, and he's an author. Rashawn Thornton, welcome to the Jones Zone podcast. How are you doing, man?
Great, great. Thank you, guys. Thank you. This is so awesome. I love what you guys are doing.
So, I don't know how familiar you are with the Jones Zone podcast, but you are the second guest ever.
Awesome.
So that's, you know, you can look back at your life and say that.
I was the second guest on the Jones Zone podcast.
You've accomplished a lot, and we'll get into that, but one of your greatest accomplishments is probably...
the Jones Zone podcast.
Being on the Jones Zone podcast.
High fives.
All right. So it is the week of 10/14 or 10/15 through 10/21. We'll recap a little bit about what we've been up to, and then we'll get into Rashawn's story and what he's got going on. Let's see. What do we have this week?
Yeah, Mr. Putty's the Putt-toberfest.
Last night, huge hit. I posted a video on our Facebook page. If you have a chance to. Check that out. Always fun at that place, man. Chris and Rob do a great job, and we had a lot of fun. Ethan got to do the rides. Andrea showed up. It was a good time.
Yeah, good time, huh?
Going to do it November, too.
Good deal.
Let's see. The oyster roast at Saltwater Markets, that was a hit, man. I didn't know what to expect, really.
Right.
And have you ever been to an oyster roast?
I have. Down in Charleston, it was pretty good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's basically like a big tailgate, right?
Pretty much.
So we didn't really know. But, I mean, when we showed up, man, it was crazy, man. They had tons of people there. Half the town of Clover was there. So, it was pretty cool.
You ate everything free, right?
We didn't get a ticket to the event. They sold out of the event. So then we went, and then we did buy some crab cakes and stuff that they had for sale, which... those were awesome.
Yeah, they were.
It's always better when it's free.
Yeah. our scarecrow. Have you seen our scarecrow? Have you driven through downtown Fort Mill yet?
I have.
Did you see that black Batman out there?
So if I'm coming...
not black. He's a white
it's
Batman.
Right beside, it's right beside...
if I'm leaving Fort Mill, it's on
Hobos.
The right-hand side, right?
Yeah, it's right beside Hobos. It's Batman dressed up. He's got a ribbon on it.
You guys put that
does
there?
Does he has a ribbon?
He's got an orange ribbon. It's quite possible that we've already won an award, despite the fact that voting hasn't concluded.
Yeah. So we're leading the voting so much they canceled the rest of.
I'm pretty sure that's probably what that is. It's
you guys put that there.
Yeah, we did.
That is too funny.
Yeah, we did.
It's a scarecrow contest. It goes through the end of the month. You can vote on the town of Fort Mill's website, which is fortmillsc.gov, and cast your vote for the Jones Brothers Scarecrow. So
awesome! We'll do it.
Our podcast, it's on iTunes, man.
Cool.
So you'll be on iTunes.
Yeah, go on the Jones Zone, search for it on iTunes. It's also on SoundCloud and Podcast Addict.
Yeah.
We're right up there with, you know, Tim Ferriss and James Altucher and all the other...
And
Joe Rogan.
Yeah, Joe Rogan. What's the other guy? Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla.
Yeah. They actually call him the godfather.
The podfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about, what's his name? Andy Fresca, Fricchetti, Andy...
that's something I will have to look into.
He has what's called the MFCEO project.
Oh, that's a good one. Is he an entrepreneur type of guy?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You gotta listen to some of his stuff.
Okay.
He cusses a lot.
Okay.
Like, the whole time.
Well, on my way over here, I was listening to a podcast with Wayne Dyer. Are you familiar with Wayne Dyer at all?
The name sounds familiar. What's
passed away.
He passed away, yes. He is an author. He's really big on meditation and thinking about...
He's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Yeah, okay. Dyer, yeah.
Good with stuff. A W.
No.
No?
Dr. Wayne Dyer. Yeah, okay. No W. But good, very informative podcast. He talks about three ways to enlightenment on Earth. I won't get into it, but it was really interesting when I was coming over here. I wanted to share with you guys.
How's your latest 30-day challenge going?
I'm glad you brought that up. That ties into a lot of what it is. So my 30-day challenge for this month, I'm going to spend 30 days meditating straight. I did not do it yesterday. I have to admit, I did not do it yesterday. But just got tied up. You know what they say? If you don't have time to meditate daily, you got to meditate twice. That's what they say.
The next day?
No. If you don't, there's an old saying, like, if you don't have time to meditate, meditate twice, because it's that important.
Oh, okay.
You gotta do it straight out the bed, first thing in the morning.
See, I have the Calm app, and it sends me a reminder at 12 o'clock. See, my fear is if I'm rolling out of bed and I sit down to meditate, I'll just fall right back asleep.
I'll fall asleep.
Okay, that means you need it.
Yeah.
That's true.
But I do it at 12 o'clock and before I go to bed, and I did it last night before. Yeah, actually, so I did meditate last night. I just didn't do it at my normal time. But I just, the peaceful sleep is what I really like about it, doing it at nighttime.
Here's a good tip.
Okay.
Think about it like prayer. Normal people pray, I guess.
Right.
So instead of praying, you just sit down and do your contemplation.
So a lot of people, what I've learned here is meditation is really, it is basically about being aware of the present moment. Because everybody mostly is... fearful. Everybody's fearful. They're fearful of things that are not going to typically happen. A lot of times they're fearful, and that's anxiety and stress, or they're caught up on what happened in the past, and they're not really, they think that their past is determining their future, and that also causes anxiety.
Absolutely.
So when you take everything away and just collect your thoughts in the present moment and focus on your breathing, a weight lifts up off of you, and it's really remarkable.
It's awesome.
Okay. So what about this, what's it called, Bouillance?
I'm glad you brought that up. Bouillance. It's Bouillance. In Huntersville. It's flotation therapy. And now this also ties into my 30-day challenge for this month is because it's all about, consciousness, higher consciousness and being, able to be in the moment. And that is going to be awesome because it's actually... Are you familiar with flotation devices? Sensory deprivation. Kind of, so we're going
in the pod with salt water.
Salt water, yep, and it raises you up and you float. And it's sensory deprivation. There's no sound, there's no light, and basically the water is the temperature of your skin. So after a few seconds, after a few moments, you don't feel yourself in water. So it's like you're floating in nothingness, and allows you to get that extra time with just your thoughts. So we're doing that next Friday. And we're going to check out the...
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to do a video, and we're going to sit down with the owner and do a podcast as well.
I learned about it, actually, from Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan's huge on it. He says that changed his life.
Wow.
Like, I shared a video yesterday about it. But, yeah, there's a lot of people who do it, and it's crazy that it's not more mainstream than it is. But that's the world we live in, It's, people don't want to have that... A lot of people don't want to have that, higher social... That higher... consciousness.
I think it's just a fear thing, or
I think, well, a lot of people, from what I've heard and what I've read on different blogs and everything, most people don't want to do it because they're claustrophobic and they think that they're claustrophobic, so when the door shuts they're trapped or whatever. But it's actually not, I mean, from what I've heard, I haven't done it yet, but it's not that bad.
So we're doing that Friday, and we'll be doing a video and a podcast with them too.
Absolutely. Yep.
Right, cool.
What time?
We are going there at 10 o'clock to do the float, and then we'll sit down with them afterwards and do the podcast and talk to them.
How long is the float?
Each float's an hour.
So you're both going to have, your own float for an hour.
Yeah, I'm definitely
get
not
out of it,
with
it
right? Yeah.
How much is it, $100?
Well, typically it's $75 for an hour float. Now, or you can become a member and for $100 a month and get unlimited floats, and you can actually give two floats to friends.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and there's a lot of other stuff too. I mean, it's like a spa. They do more than just the hydrotherapy and the
float. I'll give you $25. and I want to float.
Come with us next week, and we'll sit down with the owner and discuss it, because it's going to be awesome, man. I wish more people would, you know, try it out. Reason we're here is to talk all things Rashawn Thornton today.
Cool.
So for those of you who don't know, he's an author, and he has a book called From the Trap to Triumph. It is his autobiography, it's a great read. I actually finished it up a couple of weeks ago. I went over it yesterday and just read through again so I could be fresh for the conversation. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what made you want to put your story to paper and get your history and story out there?
Well, I was working full-time for a retailer. Mm-hmm. I had a pretty good job, good pay, good position, and constantly trying to advance, you know, always trying to advance. And I think that throughout all of my experience over the last 10 years since I was released from prison, it's always been about trying to advance. Like you were saying, you know, it's fear and anxiety. And I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because that's something that I struggle with myself. It's like
everybody does.
Constantly.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. And it's more noticeable when you can identify what it is. You know,
right.
If you just stay like, oh, he's always busy. No, it's fear-based. It's anxiety. Like, mm-hmm. You're constantly trying to do better, do more, be more. And I just got to a place where I felt like I was just stuck. Like, you know, here I am. I got a good job or whatever, but I'm not doing anything I really want to do. Sure, I love, you know, fashion and working with people. But at the end of the day, there's nothing about my life that goes into my work.
So you had a higher calling, in a sense. Is that what you're saying? Than just typically working at a store? Yeah, you wanted to pursue? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I don't like to say that. Because when you think about the next person,
right.
You know, they might be doing what they absolutely love, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can't say this is
subjective.
Higher calling.
It was subjective for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think it's an insult to say, oh, I'm going to do a whole lot more with my life than stand around here and sell shoes.
Yeah.
But you got Joe and Jane and Kevin.
And they
don't want to do anything else.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, yeah, like I just need to be doing something greater with my life, especially after all of my experience.
Right.
So share with us whatever you're comfortable with in terms of your story, man, because, I mean, that book, right from the jump, you feel like you're right there with him, and it starts when he's a kid and a teenager, and your story hooks you right in, right away. So whatever you're comfortable with is in terms of your background and your actual story, you know, if you can get, I think sharing that would go a long way to having people fight with you for the cause, and we'll get into your charities and all that sort of stuff.
Nonprofit.
Later. But
yeah, we're definitely excited about that.
I mean, can you share with us whatever you're comfortable with? And I don't want it to be a spoiler alert either, but, you know, just kind of give us a quick background about what this story's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's just my autobiography. I grew up in New Jersey. I had my mom, and she was married, a couple of siblings. My dad, they never were married. My father lived off somewhere else, had a pretty bad drug problem, in and out of prison himself, and I'm the oldest child, so I always felt like, you know, I was my own person. So I think that early on, maybe in my middle school, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, throughout that area there, I just kind of got an identity of, like, I'm my own person. Like, I know I have a mom, I have a dad, I know, you know, they feed me, buy clothes or whatever, but I always just felt like I'm my own dude. I got to figure life out on my own. I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was just, you know, years and years of growing up in different dangerous situations and not having everybody that you love be there for you. You know, I've always loved my father, never talked bad about him, although, you know, he wasn't there, but I was always just amazed about this man. And not having him, I think, made me want to just be a stand-up guy. So I just became really responsible at a very young age.
Have you watched Tony Robbins' I'm Not Your Guru yet on Netflix?
I have not.
So why I bring that up is because
I did watch it. I'm sorry, I forgot about
everything. Everything that's happened in your life basically has taken you to a direction where you're at now.
Yep.
And basically, Tony Robbins says, the example he gives is that his mother used to beat him when he was a kid, but that made him love her just as much. Grateful is the word I should say. Grateful that he had a mom like that, because it took him, it made him the man that he is today.
Awesome.
And he never, he wants to, his main goal is to end suffering for everybody that he comes in contact with.
Wow.
So if his mother would have been, you know, just a regular loving mom, he might not have been, he wouldn't have been who he is today because of that. So, you know, basically what I'm saying is when you're raised in a certain way, everything, there's always good at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. There's always more that you can do and to help inspire others who are.
I'd never think about, like, what if, you know? Like, my mom married her second husband. She got married when I was about 4, got divorced when I was probably around 10 or 11, and then she remarried when I was like 13. Her second husband, they have 2 kids together. My younger brother, half brother, he's 18 now, goes to Princeton University, worked for Facebook last summer, all summer long. Looking at our lives, it's like he had a different father, same mother, different upbringing. So it always makes me think, like, what if I had that father? You know, what if they raised me that way? You know, what could I be doing now? And it's really odd. I can't think of anything else. Like, I never really knew what I wanted to do because I got in the street at such a young age. Brian and I met, I was personal training for a time. Yeah. Thought at one time I wanted to be the best personal trainer and have this great personal training business. But when I think about it, the opportunity was there. And when someone pushes you to do something and say, hey, you're great at this, and you really don't know yourself or what you want to do, then you'll take it and you say, yeah, I'm going to be great at this, but that still might not be your calling. That might not be your passion.
Right.
So
I feel like we're skipping around a little bit, because we talked about, you know, you casually threw in that you were in prison.
Yeah.
And you talked about as a kid having a strong desire to feel independent. So how did those emotions, and then your mother having different husbands, how did all those emotions and feelings manifest themselves into your behavior and the situation that you found yourself in as a young adult and a teenager? And then how did that kind of transition to lead you to be an entrepreneur and stuff?
Well, I think that I've always had this, I'll say, a hustling spirit, right? Whether it was selling drugs or when I was, you know, like you said, we're skipping around, but when I was in prison, I would draw. I could draw like crazy. Like out of the womb, I remember picking up a pencil and drawing. So instead of getting into, you know, violent altercations or stealing or doing whatever I needed to do to make some money, I could draw. And when I was there, I got deep back into art, and people would pay me to draw. Like, here's my mother or my daughter. Can you draw a picture?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's cool.
And this is like a prison story. This is so funny. I'm glad to share it with your viewers, though. These items are sitting here. This would be currency. Right. So, like, you draw me a picture, I'll pay you this.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Now I got it. You need it. Like, hey, I'll give you these 3 if you give me back 5 at the end of the week.
Right.
So I was taking care of myself. I was always hustling. I've been doing it since I was 14, 15 years old. So even now, that same drive is there. Like, I'm not comfortable working for some company. I really, you know, no one can sell me their vision. No one can sell me their idea. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, these big companies, they give us great jobs. You could be making $1 million a year, but someone sold you their vision, their idea, and they're making you profitable for them.
Right.
That's cool for some people.
Right.
I don't care if I ever make $1 million. I honestly don't. I want to know that when I died, I created something. And that's really what's satisfying to me, is being able to create things.
Well, leave a legacy.
Absolutely.
Right.
Great word.
Yeah. Definitely.
I don't care if it's $1 billion or whatever. I want to, I'm like at this place right now, and that's why I wrote the book. I want to be able to say I've done some really awesome things, and when I'm gone, someone can always pick it up and go back to it.
Yeah, definitely.
You talk about legacy, and that's really cool that you've, so what are some of the ventures that you have? Obviously, you have the book. We're going to talk about the Triumphant Academy. What else are some things that you're working on? You got a suit line. I mean, just what aren't you doing? It might be the easier question.
Yeah. Well, I'll say I'm really happy. I'm fortunate. It's a struggle. None of it's easy. I don't, you know, try to make it seem like I'm making a ton of money. It's just putting ideas together. I'm literally doing everything I ever wanted to do right now. I'm still personal training. I'm managing a gym part-time. I have a few people that consult with me for, like, fashion ideas and stuff like that. The only thing I'm not doing is drawing or playing chess, which I love to do, but I'll get to that later. Working on the audiobook. We have exactly 11 more weeks of recording before it'll be done. I can't wait to release it. I know Brian's a hip-hop fan. He's going to love it because it's all, like, real good music. The suits, I actually partnered with a guy. It's a long story. I won't go into it, but I met a guy online in Sweden who has an office in Vietnam where, and I can't say the name of the company, but all these designers get all their stuff from cheap labor somewhere, and I was able to tap into one of those resources, and I'm going to be able to get suits literally at, like, manufacturer's cost and do tailor-made, customized suits, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah,
that
sounds awesome. Yeah, so let me ask you a question. Reading your book and everything, what was the scariest moment that you had in the drug game when you were younger?
Scariest moment.
I don't want to, you know, do any spoilers or anything, but there is an example when you were in Rock Hill and the cops came in the parking lot of that store. And
honestly, that was not a scary
moment. That wasn't scary.
Okay. It really wasn't because, again, you know, I want to tell a story, I knew I wasn't in any real trouble at that moment, so it was really funny to me. Can I use profanity?
Yeah, go ahead.
We don't care.
I was a real asshole as a young guy. I really was. So that whole moment was funny to me, but they were serious. We're going to bust you. And I just kind of taunted them about it. But to answer your question, the scariest moment that I ever had was in New Jersey. I had a couple of guys actually robbed me. Like, I had never really been robbed before, and it wasn't like, you know, gun in your mouth, give us everything you got. It was a little bit more organized, and I knew at that moment that if I didn't do what they wanted me to do, I wasn't going to live.
Stick up kids?
Yeah, or pretty much. Yeah,
Omar Littles?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. But they're a lot more organized. Yeah. Like, they had a whole operation set up.
Yeah.
They had a building that they used. They had a lookout. They had a guy who's like a friend of the family. So
Did you know that the original 50 Cent is not Curtis Jackson, but 50 Cent was actually a stick-up kid in Harlem, I want to say.
Yeah.
Do you know? Okay, cool.
Read about him. Yeah. Read about him. There's a lot of stories, like a lot of really interesting characters, real people, who we don't hear about. Larry Davis. You gotta look up Larry Davis. He has a crazy story.
I love Larry David.
Basketball player?
Kirby Enthusiasm.
Larry David.
No, I'm just kidding. Not yet, but Larry Davis.
Check out Larry Davis, New York City. He, like, went to war with the police. It's crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Someone should make a movie about it. When you guys get the budget, you should make a Larry Davis movie.
Yeah, that's an idea.
So you were born in New Jersey, right?
Yep.
1979. When did
79.
You? And you came down to the Charlotte area to live with your grandma?
Yes.
And then you went back to New Jersey, though, right?
Back and forth.
Okay.
Back and forth.
And your first experiment in drugs and stuff was towards 13, 14 years old?
14, 15.
Now, what age did you get arrested and put in prison and stuff?
Got arrested when I was 20. Right before my 21st birthday. I have a daughter. She's 16. She was born that summer as well. Her birthday.
Did you miss the birth for being in prison?
No. I missed the birth, believe it or not. I actually, I was out on bond, and I had a part-time job, and I was actually at work when the baby came.
Oh, man. Okay. And then how long were you in prison for?
6 years, 9 months, and 18 days exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. And then you got...
It wasn't that long.
Was that here or was that up north too?
In South Carolina.
Okay.
South Carolina has one of the worst prison systems on the planet, I'm sure. Just I think I'd rather be locked up in Vietnam in the Mekong Delta or something.
Did you have a lot of frightening experiences while you were in prison? Did you get along with people? Did you kind of stay low, or did you kind of, you know, ruffle some feathers?
Honestly, every violent altercation that I had, I was the aggressor every time, and it was usually because of space. I kind of turned myself into like this monk while I was there, and if anyone violated my space, my peace, then I would, you know, I would. And I would give you a story, weird story. So I'm locked in this two-man cell with this one kid. Real quick, I won't take too much time. And a lot of the younger guys, they would masturbate when they see a female officer coming.
Oh, jeez, right? Man.
So we're locked in this cell, and he's like, man, can you turn your back or cover your head or something? Because the broad's coming around. I'm gonna get her. I'm like, no, don't do that while I'm in here. If I wasn't in here, you do what you want to do.
Yeah.
So he went on to do whatever he wanted to do, and the lady came by, and as soon as he got done, I went to him. Mm. And we ended up going in the hole. We stayed on lockdown for about 30 days. And he bit me, too. He actually bit me on my trap.
So your book, Trapped to Triumph, is about how you were a young person. You got involved in drugs, got arrested, and got out. And now you're...
drug dealing.
Huh?
Drug dealing.
He's not drug dealing now.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. No.
But I would, but I'm scared. Drugs.
I thought maybe that you. Never mind.
No.
But I like them. Your book does a great job at conveying the fear and anxiety that you faced when you were on trial. And the pain that you put your family through and your girlfriend at the time.
Yep.
So we kind of touched it on earlier on, but do you regret your past? Or do you think that it makes you who you are today? Are you thankful for it?
I won't say that I regret it. I get sad about it still, even now. It's honestly very depressing. I was actually talking with my dad about it this morning, that there's some times where you really feel like maybe I need to go get some therapy or some counseling, because you never really recover, you know, after that much time.
Yeah. Are you talking about post-traumatic stress stuff, like in the prison, or like missing your family and stuff?
That's really what it is. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. It is. We don't think about it with incarceration like we do with, military service or veterans. Yeah.
So, sorry to cut you off, but my prior 30-day challenge was learning about hallucinogens as a form of medicinal purposes kind of thing. Now, across my studies over the 30 days, a lot of people who suffer from PTSD do that stuff.
Hallucinogen.
Yes, under a doctor's care. There's a facility called Crossroads Ibogaine, and they deal with a lot of people who have PTSD from the military or police officers.
Wow.
And it's an alternative to, you know, the serotonin uptake inhibitors that the pharmaceutical company will put you on.
Wow.
But a lot of people say, like, there's a lot of good claims, feedback from people saying that it takes you to a place where something was very traumatic, mm-hmm. but you don't have any type of emotion attached to it when you're on under the Ibogaine.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that I'm not saying anything, but that's it just resonated with me about what I was talking about last podcast.
That's awesome. Well, I have been saving so that I can go down to the Amazon jungle in the rainforest and get some ayahuasca.
Yeah, ayahuasca, Ibogaine, all that's the same thing. Well, not the same thing, but under the same classifications.
That is awesome. That is one of my... We got a lot of stuff in common.
We do, man. We do.
Thomas McKenna. Read about him.
Yeah,
listen
Terrence,
to him all
Terrence
the time.
Terrence McKenna. Yeah.
Oh, did I say Thomas?
Yeah, you said Thomas.
Terrence McKenna.
Yeah. Terrence McKenna, for those of you who don't know who are listening, he's a famous researcher of LSD. And LSD, back in the 50s and 60s, before it got outlawed by the government, there's a lot of studies saying how beneficial it is to people with mental illnesses and PTSD. Well, I don't know if they said PTSD or not, but... a lot of mental illnesses, and the government came and shut it off, shut it down. But Terrence McKenna, definitely look him up. He's a very interesting cat. He's a very interesting cat.
Yeah, he really is.
I just like the way you said it. He's a very interesting cat.
He's a cat, you know?
I'm just kidding. He's a cat. He's one of those guys.
But I also like the double meaning of the word trap in your book. Obviously, well, I don't want to say obviously because people might not know.
I didn't know it before.
Yeah, so the trap... I have more street cred than you, so I know the trap.
Yeah, you go ahead and explain.
So the trap basically is like a place where.
Can I let Rashawn describe the trap, please?
Definitely. Thank you.
Do us all a favor.
I would rather Brian, because it lets me know that he understands.
So all the right, trap. Okay, so for the trap is like, you know, a place where drugs are being sold at, or you know, just a place where they're stored at, sold at. Am I right, Rashawn?
You're right.
Basically, but in his book, he mentions that, and he defines it in his book, but he also talks about the trap that a lot of African Americans find themselves in, you know, the trap of going to prison, the trap of gangbanging, the trap of an early death. And I think a lot of it has to do with learned helplessness.
Learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So basically, I mean, it's like, in my opinion, the trap could come from, it could be a manifestation of, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, yeah. The music that they listen to, the movies that the, and when I say they, I'm talking about inner city youth, they fall into this learned helplessness, almost like it's like what is expected of them.
Defeatism.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that double meaning of the trap where you go to get the drugs and the trap of, you know, the hustle, the trap of trying to get out of the inner city, the trap of trying to succeed, and the trap of, you know.
So funny you mentioned that. I remember, it was like 2000, but not long before I was arrested. I was in New Jersey. I'm 20 years old, 1920, somewhere around there. And there was a guy, Tobias is his name. We grew up together. And he's like a star football player for one of the schools up north. I think he went to Syracuse, if I'm not mistaken. And he was on the block, like hustling.
Oh, really?
And he lived in one of the worst neighborhoods in my town. And I walked past him like, yo, what up? And he was, you know, making a transaction, like literally in the middle of a transaction. Oh, wow. And I was like, yo, aren't you supposed to be making some all-star plays or something right about now? He's like, yeah, I feel you, fam, but I got to get it. I'm like,
damn.
That stuck with me, and it still does now. I don't know what he's doing today, but there's another guy, not going to say his name, but really close to him. He actually graduated from a good school playing football. He just got like 20-something years for running a heroin factory in New Jersey.
Jeez, man.
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely...
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
It's man. A trap.
So, we talked about your past, all right? So let's talk about your future, your vision for the next, you know, several of years. We mentioned that you're working on a clothing line or for suits. Tell us about your nonprofit, the Triumphant Academy, that you're launching.
The Triumphant Academy is a nonprofit educational program for at-risk and underprivileged youth. One thing I really learned and valued over the years is the importance of education. I feel that if a lot of the kids in my past circumstances who are living under the same circumstances have more exposure to like diverse cultures and an advanced education, that'll just give you an opportunity to do better. Rock Hill City Schools, and it's going to be in Rock Hill, the city schools have just recently adopted some new standard where, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, I can't remember what it's called, but an example is a 60 used to be failing, but now it's a D. And 89 used to be a B, but now it's an A.
So they lowered the grade. They lowered that. They're lowering expectations because they just want to push people through.
Yeah.
The education system, I'm not going to talk a lot about it, but it's broken.
Yeah, it's terrible.
They're just pushing people through to get the funding, and they're lowering expectations, and they're teaching to the test. The whole concept of education is to... I don't want to get on a whole tangent, but...
Hey, that's a show. Like, you could do a full show.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. I'm going to save that for another time, but...
That's our whole purpose for and I say ours. I have a group of people that are working with me. You guys have reached out to help out as well. I appreciate it. I have some educators who are working to create an actual curriculum based on some of the standards that you find in places like Singapore and Sweden, who have the highest test scores amongst grade school level children in the whole world. So what we want to do is emulate some of those educational models so that the kids have a greater ability to be competitive.
Right.
You know, it's not about just going to school and that they're finishing school, which is great, but we want them to be competitive, because as the job market is decreasing, which it really is, mm-hmm. then these kids have to have some kind of tool that they're going to be more valuable to society, and I feel like education is going to do it.
Is this are you guys going to start as like an after school program, or how is that going to, when you launch this program, how's it going to look?
All right, so next spring we're doing a assessment for a week during spring break, right? And we're going to just basically bring in about 50 kids, give them all types of tests. I don't know how all this stuff works. I have a team of professionals who are going to help with all of that. We're going to pick 25 kids for the summer pilot program. So the pilot program is going to last 6 to 8 weeks, where we're going to offer them every possible opportunity we can, from academic excellence to art, music, boot camp drills. I'm trying to get martial arts into it. I got to find someone who does martial arts who's willing to help out. And
he'd probably help you.
Cool. We're going to just do a we're going to do a trial. It's a pilot. We're going to try it out, see how successful it is, learn what things we need to improve on, and we're going to ultimately petition the state for a charter. A charter school, if anyone doesn't know what a charter school is, the charter school is basically an alternative to state-run or government schooling, where the kids have an opportunity to have an alternative to modern education. And a lot of times it helps kids out who have ADHD or other learning disabilities.
So a partner of ours is actually the Riverwalk Academy in Rock Hill. We did a video there, and that's a charter school, and their main focus is project-based learning, which, like I said in the video, for somebody like me, you know, I get bored after 2 minutes of sitting through anything, even like movies. It takes me, like, I watch movies in, you know, 4 or 5 different segments because I just have trouble sitting through it. Something like that. But yeah, so charter school, good alternative. That's my
question. The students, where are you going to, are these going to be referrals from other nonprofits or people in the community? How are you guys going to reach out to, where are you going to find these children to help?
Good question. There are probably 20 different nonprofits in Rock Hill right now that are helping underprivileged kids. And we have partnered up with several of them that are already working with some kids. I partnered up with Officer Andrews with the Rock Hill City Police Department. He works with some of the kids in the community. There's a few events that are taking place, like tonight. There's a fall festival at the Emmett Scott Community Center from 6:30 to 8:30. So I'll be out there handing out flyers and giving applications to people and taking them on the spot. There's a couple other events. There's one on the 31st at the Transformation Center on Saluda Street. Yes. We'll be there meeting people as well.
Can parents submit applications for their children? Or does this need to come from a referral source, or how's that work?
Oh, no. It's hands-on directly with the parents because they have to approve it. The application is about 3 pages long, so just ask some of the educational history. Ask a little bit about the home. It's economic based, so if people meet the criteria, a lot of the single mothers, you know, people who are underemployed, they'll definitely benefit from it. So basically, we really want to take in the kids who need it. Yeah. There's a lot of people out there who would take advantage of a free summer program.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
You know,
yeah, dude. Yeah. Send my kids there.
No,
yeah.
We don't want anybody taking advantage of it. You know, taking up space from some kid who really needs it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you about, you mentioned the parents and stuff. So, is this program going to offer a community aspect or an in-the-home aspect, or is this just a place where the kids come and they still go home to the same environment that kind of, not produce them the way they are, but it kind of encouraged them to act the, or that put them in that tough spot to begin with. Is there going to be an at-home aspect to this at all where you incorporate the parents?
He asked some really great questions, and that actually leads into the bigger vision. So the bigger vision is to have a charter school with 100 to 200 kids as an alternative to jail or prison. So when kids commit crimes, you know, depending on the nature or the veracity of what they've done, they can either go to, like, juvenile detention or, you know, some other program. So what we want to do is have a group home set up in the city that will serve the county, that will allow at least 10. I think 10 is a good number. We'll be able to take 10 boys in and take them out of the environment, take them out of the home. Because I had that situation myself. A lot of the kids need to be, like you said, out of the environment that produced the behavior anyway. Put them into a place where they're going to learn some structure, some organization, and some life skills that are going to be able to help them out, and they can go back and help their communities.
Cool.
Cool, man. Well, we like to end each podcast with surprise questions.
Uh-oh. For me or me for you?
Both. So, if you could only watch 3 TV series, I know you don't have a lot of time for TV right now, but in the 3 TV series for the rest of your life, which 3 would they be?
3 TV series for the rest of my life. Definitely, first thing that came to mind would be The X-Files. I'm a big conspiracy theorist. I love The X-Files. The Walking Dead. And that's another conspiracy. I feel like The Walking Dead is kind of preparing us for
what's going to happen like next.
That's starting this Sunday, right? Is the new season?
Yeah, the new season starts Sunday, yeah.
All right, so The X-Files, The Walking Dead, and I don't know. I got to laugh, so it would probably be something old school funny like Good Times or The Jeffersons or something.
All right, good deal.
Chris? Mine were Seinfeld, because it's a lot of seasons, and it makes me laugh. It's a funny one.
I like Seinfeld.
The other one, I just had it. It was something on HBO, and I just lost it in my head.
Sopranos?
No. But Sopranos is a good one, too. Dang, I'm going to kick myself for not writing this down. I should have wrote while he was talking.
Well, let me tell you mine while you come back to it.
All right,
come back to it. People don't want to listen to Dead Space for 30 minutes. Now, the top 3, or the not my favorite shows, but the 3 series for the rest that I would watch for the rest of my life. Okay, so my favorite show is The Sopranos, but I'm not going to put that on there because I've already watched it so many times already, and yeah. When you can quote each episode.
Breaking Bad was mine.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not HBO, but that's one that I would definitely take with me.
So Seinfeld, Breaking Bad, that's 2.
Oh, Seinfeld, Breaking Bad, and... All right, let me think of the 3rd one.
Okay. I love your preparedness for this, by the way. So, mine is Game of Thrones, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and... So, this is a tie. So, Curb Your Enthusiasm. If you can tell, I'm stalling right now.
Yeah, I can tell. You mock my preparedness for a random question, by the way. And then...
Okay, so Sopranos. No. So, okay. This is insane. Okay. The Game of Thrones, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and.
Just stick with The Sopranos.
The Sopranos.
Wait,
The Sopranos.
I know that.
The Office. The Office.
The Office.
Just because I'm looking at the number of seasons and the number of episodes, and it's going to keep me entertained for a longer period. So we got The Office, the British or the American version, even though I like the British one better, but there's not as much episodes. So we got the American Office, Game of Thrones, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Goodness.
And I'm going with Seinfeld.
I take this way too seriously.
Like it's going to actually happen. No. I'm going with Seinfeld. What was the other one I said?
Breaking Bad.
And a 3rd TV show if I had to take with me. It would definitely be some sort of drama. I'm thinking The Sopranos.
Okay.
Because you get comedy and drama with The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly fun.
Okay. Well, Rashawn, thanks so much for appearing on the Jones Zone podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Be sure to, yeah. So, guys at home, if you're listening, find us on iTunes, subscribe, like, comment, share. We want to engage with you guys. Chris, you have anything you want to talk before?
I do. Rashawn Thornton is the author from Trap.
Where can they find
it? Triumph. It's on Amazon, right?
It's on Amazon. Most importantly, I want people to check out the book. If you do, if you read, if you don't read, you can follow me on Facebook, Rashawn Ali Thornton. Audiobook will be released the 1st of 2017 if we're not at war with Russia yet.
Is that on Audible or Kindle? Or what's the Audible book going to be on?
The audio book. It'll more than likely be on iTunes.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff on there with... We're doing some copyright infringement violations, so we can't sell it. But it'll be downloadable for free everywhere that you can find it for free.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for coming, dude.
Thank you,
guys. Appreciate it.
Wow, that was tough. I'm going to eat somebody's peanut butter cookie, man. This is my nervous reaction.
There's a lot of stuff on there. Hey, it's Chris and Brian. Violations, so we can't sell it.
Yeah, I forgot I had my meat.
What's the fun? Mm-hmm. Is it still...